Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I tell you, this is a glorious, glorious occasion. I'm here with my brother, Larry Pinckney, former Black Panther Party member. Here what gets me. Why do people be saying former Black Panther Party member? Once a Black Panther member, you always a Black Panther Party member. I don't quite get this. You're going to have to educate me, my brother. You're going to have to tell me what they mean, because I don't like that term, former Black Panther Party member. In my eyesight, you are still a member of the Black Panther Party.
Well, you're right. Once a Panther, always a Panther. If
that's
you were
right.
Real then, you're real now.
Yes.
Go ahead, brother.
There's no question, Larry, that most people don't understand that, because I don't think that this is my way of thinking that you could never leave the Black Panther Party. how can you leave it?
Well, as long as the struggle exists, and it still exists, you can't. The struggle goes on. The expression that I use rather than former Black Panther Party members, I say veteran of the Black Panther Party.
Okay.
Because, I think that's more accurate, simply because just what you just said, brother, because the struggle continues.
Oh, absolutely. No question about that. It's going to continue forever.
Yep.
Here's something that happened up here in the Detroit. They claimed that this guy was going to blow the plane up. Now, how stupid can they think the people are? It's just to drive that code up, There's no way possible what they're saying could possibly be happening.
Right.
I done read stuff about it. People done call me about it. And everybody want my opinion. Say, what do you think about that? I said, just like 9/11, same stuff. I said the CIA did it. They were planning somebody. And they say, well, why do you say that? I said, let's look at the evidence. You calling me, telling me about this, you haven't reviewed the evidence to support what you're saying?
Exactly.
You see, and I told him, I said, stop believing it, what the newspaper and the media be saying. That's corporate operation. Operation Petticoat,
That's what
I was trying to convince him to think that, you calling me and want to know my opinion about it, you don't have an opinion, it's obvious. You see, so that kind of had me a little confused. I tell you, but we have had a great week this week, and I tell you this stuff. We had our Whirlpool stuff going on as usual, and I'm trying to decide how we're going to deal with this Whirlpool mess, because to me it's out of hand, I was just thinking about that. I was going over the list, you from Ben Harbor Wind, and this is number 41 on the list, and I tell you, I can't get past it. It said, if you can go to Donnie Page Porch and get your hair cut, smoke some weed, and watch the niggas sell dope across the street all at the same time, then you're from Benton Harbor. Man, I said, that messed me up. I said, good grief. I said, a white supervisor from Whirlpool can give somebody something like this and nothing happened to him. Instead of firing the guy that gave the black girl this, they fired the black girl.
Right, right, right.
I said, I'm messed up myself. I don't understand that at all. I don't see the logic in it. I don't even know how they think they're going to get away with it.
Well, if we let them get away with if the people allow them to get away with it, then they will. But if we do not allow Whirlpool Corporation and these other corporations, but in this case specifically Whirlpool, to get away with this outrageous act against the people, then they will not get away with it. But, the whole point is to, I was reading an email that I got, relating to this brother from Bunko, and it's important to stop buying Whirlpool products. Just
absolutely. And then here's the deal. It just can't be here in this country. It's got to be an international boycott.
That's
and
right.
Only way we you see we got the crossroad women, and they are international.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and but you know, I was on their show last week, and I was talking to them about this. They're 100% in support of spreading the word, of really trying to get people to really move against Whirlpool, because
mm-hmm.
most people don't understand Whirlpool is like a cancer, and it's really eating up this community, eating up the country.
Right.
They're the only
right.
company who walk around here with a monopoly on stove, refrigerators, washer, and dryers, and the governor says okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
but the bottom line, they got a triple B rating. They're just one step away from being junk stock. That's what
mm-hmm.
I like most of all.
Yeah.
I tell you, this is something, you know. I just wish the Black Panther Party, what would they do with a Whirlpool? You know, let's say if something like this happened back in their days.
Well, I'll tell you what we did, for example, with ARCO, the Atlantic Richfield Company,
mm-hmm.
okay, that, claimed very much like Whirlpool. They claimed to, you know, to be progressive. They claimed to honor human rights. They claimed to care about the community and the work environment, all of which was a bunch of crap, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They did the opposite of everything they said, okay? And with ARCO, we called it ARCO, Atlantic Richfield Company.
Okay,
they were,
mm-hmm.
you know, also international, right?
Right,
you
absolutely.
You could stop at an ARCO gas station to get gas or whatever you were going to get, right?
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they would treat you, you know, like you just got off the banana boat,
uh-huh.
okay, and just disrespect you. So what we did was we said, okay, that's the way you want to do it? Fine. We went to their international headquarters, which was at the time in San Francisco, might still be, but it was at the time, and we closed it down.
Yeah.
And we closed down the international headquarters. We had hundreds of people there, both right at the office as well as, because they were in a big skyscraper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These corporations think they're in heaven, and their offices were at the top. So we had people who went to the top at their offices and sat in and said, you know, you're going to make us uncomfortable. We're going to make you uncomfortable. And we had hundreds of people at the bottom, meaning at the building, at the foundation of the building on the streets, surrounding the entryway and letting people, reminding everybody that this company was racist.
Mm.
And, you know, of course, they were in apartheid South Africa and supporting the apartheid government of South Africa, and naturally they were doing the same kinds of things, you know, here in this country.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we need to go back to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to return to serious organizing in the streets.
Uh-huh.
And we also need to, in terms of organizing, we also need to get the word out. Like you said, Reverend Pinckney, the bottom line is that they are not only national, but they are international.
International.
You know, they're blood-sucking us, bro.
Yeah.
They're blood-sucking. They're blood-sucking in the case of the community in Benton Harbor, Mississippi, Michigan. They're blood-sucking the community there, but they're blood-sucking the communities all over the country and indeed all over the world, and we need to get that out.
Absolutely.
You know,
and you know what you're saying is tremendous, because that's where we need to go. We need to start this grassroots, and we need to start at the very bottom. We need to just start maybe marching around Whirlpool out here. You know,
mm-hmm.
as a matter of fact, I would love to start organizing a mass demonstration against Whirlpool right here on their very own property. I would love to see maybe 2,000-3,000 people show up just here, just to show
mm-hmm.
Whirlpool we're not going to take this mess anymore. I tell you, this is so tremendous, and I just don't want to spend any more time on Whirlpool, because we know they're a racist company. We know
mm-hmm.
that what they're doing is wrong. We know one thing: we're not going to allow them to get away with it. And what we're going to do, we're going to start strategizing. And we started with the boycott of all their products. Then we'll start putting together a mass demonstration maybe for a couple of months, or maybe we can get maybe 30, 40 people to march at one time, and we get 30 different people every day to do it for maybe for 30 days or something like that. Because I would love to see 3,000-4,000 folks show up, but I would rather see maybe 30, 40 every day, maybe a different group so we don't burn people out, to let people know that we got a real problem here. And I think that will be the way to deal with a whirlpool, because one thing, they think they're invincible. You see what I'm saying?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
You know,
they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we bring on Ralph, I just want to talk a little bit about this Willie Lynch. You know, I know how I would deal with it, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
But let me read what this guy said. This book is so incredible. I mean, if you and don't think you're too high and mighty to read this book, you people out there, because this book is really saying something. I tell you, I'm just going to read a couple of excerpts from it. This guy said, "In my bag here, I have a foolproof method for controlling you your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that if installed correctly, it will control the slave for at least 300 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it." He said, "I have outlined a number of differences among the slave, and I take these differences and make them bigger. I use fear, distrust, and envy for control purpose. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies and is still working throughout the South. Take this simple little title of difference and think about them. On top of my list is age, but it is there only because it starts with the letter A. The second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, size, plantation, statue on the plantation, attitude of owners, whether the slave live in the valley or on the hill, east, west, north, south, have fine hair, coarse hair, or is tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I should give you an outline of action. But before that, I should assure you that the distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than admiration, respect, or anything else." Oh, man, this is terrible. But now think about this for a second, Larry. Now, what if, you know, I know that you know all about the Willie Lynch theory and all that kind of stuff, and I'm convinced it's working today. But that's why the Black Panther Party is so viable today. We need the Black Panther. We need somebody strong who's going to take a stand for us. And I tell you, you know, I don't know how hard it is, you know, for people to understand this and really visualize this. This is a bad, bad book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's Larry. It's all these years I read the letter, but I've never dug this deep into this book. And I tell you, everybody should read it.
Yeah.
And it reflects us.
Yes, it does. It right to the present day. If you notice, one of the things that it says is it talks about shades, color, pigmentation. Okay. And if you notice, it's no accident, for example, that Barack Obama, the so-called president of the empire and of the plantation of which we're on, is you know, it's all about playing off people against each other. And Willie Lynch describes it in detail.
Mm-hmm.
In detail. You have the slaves, okay, basically fighting each other, envious of each other. Now they're slaves now.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. And look at today. That's what it's all about. Now, you know, just as they did in the blatant slavery days. I say blatant because we're still in slavery.
Oh,
that
absolutely. We definitely in. We just want to acknowledge it.
Exactly. And just as they did in the blatant slavery days. Okay, of the blatant plantations. You know, they would get certain biological blacks to rule over for the master. Hear what I'm saying? Rule over the rest of the slaves for the master. Okay? And that's what we have Barack Obama is a perfect example. It's terrible, but it's a perfect example. His job is to be, you know, the master's or massa, as
mm-hmm.
they would say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a massa's boy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, his job is to, as Malcolm pointed out, be the house Negro.
House Negro.
And keep black people divided and subjugated. Subjugated. Okay?
Let me ask you one quick question. What mm-hmm. if Obama was a dark skinned black, as they call
well,
it? What was the chance of him becoming president?
Very, 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 very little chance.
Mm-hmm.
Because color complexion. That's not to say that just because someone is dark complexion, they're therefore down with the people. That's not
mm-hmm.
to say that. But
mm-hmm.
color and complexion in this society are extremely important, and even amongst blacks, because that's part of what's called the plantation slave mentality that has been beaten into, whipped into, drilled into to black folks,
mm-hmm.
okay, that the lighter you are, the whiter you are, the better you are. You
mm-hmm.
notice that you read the thing that talked about fine hair.
Right.
Well, what is fine hair? In other words, so if your hair is quote-unquote kinky, if
uh-huh.
it's woolly, then you got so-called bad hair. But you see, the closer you are to looking like massa, okay, the more useful
mm-hmm.
you are to or can be to subjugating black people. And
yeah.
and that, so to answer your question, it was no accident
mm-hmm.
that they chose Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
It was no accident because, as we would say back in the day, he was light, right, and damn near white. Okay? Okay? So
I know
so
that
he,
term. Go ahead, my
so,
brother.
You know, so that was very, very important.
Yeah.
And it's no accident.
Larry, on that note, I'm
mm-hmm.
gonna I gotta bring on Ralph. Ralph
All
is
right.
waiting on the line, and Ralph, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, you gentlemen have hit on all of the issues that are confronting us today.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you're doing a job. Right? When you say, what can we do? Every Sunday you get on doing it, and that's transformation of knowledge, information, getting it out to people. This means education of our people. And, you know, one of the things that one of my dear friends, one of our dear revolutionaries, Betty Davis, she taught the Willie Lynch syndrome in high school,
mm-hmm.
and presently she teaches it in college. And one
mm-hmm.
of the things that she talks about is the shock of the students when it becomes the plan that has been set out for us has been in use for years, and they recognize how it has worked against them. And that
mm-hmm.
you brought this up, you know, like and brought in our friend Obama,
mm-hmm.
and I use that euphemistically. And when you ask the question, well, had he been a dark-skinned person of color, would it have made a difference? Of course it would. But the saddest thing of that question is it would have made a difference with us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I say the difference between the racism of black people and the racism of white people towards black people is white people have power to do something about
mm-hmm.
it. We just
mm-hmm.
have feelings about it. And I remember way back in the 60s, when I was talking to Stokely Carmichael, you know, whatever you think of Stokely or not, I said, you know, how is, and I'm from New York City, and I met him in New York City, and around the Black Panther Party, the forming of the Black Panther Party, and conferences that we had, and I'm saying, how is it that you come up with Julian Bond? I like Julian.
Mm-hmm.
He's not us. And his
mm-hmm.
answer was very simple. Ralph, what you don't understand is we never could have gotten a person of my hue elected
mm-hmm.
among black people.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Lynch
mm-hmm.
syndrome.
Absolutely.
Information, education. And let me jump to our, euphemistically, friend, Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is. Why was he so captivating of the black community? Because he spoke the king's English. Didn't matter what he said.
Mm-mm.
he spoke it in a manner that was better than McCain. So here we have a light-skinned person speaking the King's English, and I submit to you that he is the most ridiculous, childish, uneducated person that I have met. He was endowed by them with their degree. He graduated from Harvard.
Absolutely.
Therefore, we assumed he knew something.
That's
and
true.
I was speaking. I was speaking to Larry the other day, and I'm saying, you know, he kind of reminds me of Calhoun in Amos and Andy. You know, when he came, and he used all of these words, and it impressed people.
Right.
Now, we knew to laugh.
Absolutely.
When Calhoun came on, but now we have Obama, and we don't laugh. And I'm going to get right to the point on that. Now, Obama, a Harvard-educated scholar, who stands before the American people and talks about the black man's responsibility. Now, anyone who took any course, any sociology, any political course at all, 101, this is elementary, you do not speak of rights without responsibility, or you do not speak of responsibility without rights. So then he gets up and says in the King's English, oh, well, we have stolen from you since 1619. We have Jim Crowed you. We have second-class citizenship you. But you have responsibility, skipping over the rights. Now, any sociology teacher would have failed him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he gets great applause by not only their community, who knows what they have him up there to do, but by our community.
Yes.
This would be funny if it didn't affect our lives personally. So I says, when he comes on, I says, we have been lulled into that Calhoun syndrome if you say it in a certain manner, no matter how foolish it is that you're saying, it becomes acceptable. It reminds me of Patrick Moynihan, you know, the late so-called great senator from the state of New York, who said benign neglect. Oh, yeah, we imprisoned you. We did all of that. We gave you a little bit of welfare. We did that. But it's time now for us to take the welfare affirmative rights away, let you go on your own. Benign neglect. That sounded nice.
But
that was racist to the core.
Absolutely. Hey, Ralph, let me say this to you. You know, one of the things that came out earlier when he was actually, before he even ran, they were saying he was from Harvard, and the news media kept saying that he was a great speaker.
Oh.
Every single word came out of his mouth was great.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? He says nothing. I felt like I could have got up there and gave a better speech than he was giving. But the media would not have said the same thing in reference to me.
Right.
Right.
You see, and that's how he got to be known as a great speaker. I don't see it, but maybe somebody else who may be a little bit smarter than me, may went to Harvard or Yale, can figure that out. I do not see him as being a great speaker. You see, you may have to help me on that one, because I don't know, Ralph. You talk to me.
No. He certainly is not a great speaker. He just uses the King's English in a manner in which they find acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
We are living in a Eurocentric society. That means anything European, and if it sounds European, it is considered good.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody said it better than Satchel Paige. You know, don't look back because, you know, back there may be catching up on you. Mother wit, all of this. We said, yes, this is very intelligent. It's funny, but it sounds like a black man.
Mm-hmm.
So we laughed. No matter how much information is in there. Joe Lewis, you can run, but you cannot hide.
Right.
You smile, but there's a lot of information in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So we give credit. We give great, great accountability, great credit to people who speak like our enemies, who use the language like our enemies. That's why I'm so happy, you know, when I think of coming on your program and, you know, listening to the information you're putting out there. And when you talk about Whirlpool and ARCO, business as usual, America is a junkie on cheap labor and cheap raw materials.
Right.
And it's the same story over and over again. We're the last hired and the first fired. They have cheap labor in the country. Then they replace us with South America, labor from south of the border.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they get tired of them, as you have seen, they send them home. They arrest them. They do. For us, they just made us unemployed.
Absolutely.
And then they'd have somebody like Patrick Moynihan to say it nice how they're going to destroy us. And now we have somebody, white in capitalism in a black face, Obama saying, hey, you guys ain't holding up your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, first, you better give us our rights. Nobody challenged him on that. And I condemn the whole liberal left society for sitting while he made these outrageous statements.
And normally, you know, him and Jackson, Reverend Jesse Jackson, they was none friends before he became president. It looked like him or Al Sharpton or this guy named this professor, I think is Boyce, but he always speaking out on everything. And he's West, Professor West, all these guys. All these guys, you will imagine, will be saying something in reference to this, but they were silent. Nobody said nothing.
So I'm saying, now, this is either there is ignorant, and I'm not ashamed to say that. Ralph Pointer said either they are as ignorant as President Obama or they're in on something.
Mm-hmm.
How is this that you can come out and say something as foolish as that, be the president of the country, and no one challenge you on that?
Nobody.
Right. Right.
The responsibilities, they go together hand in glove. If you make that mistake in Sociology 101, you just failed the course.
That's
the beginning.
But
if you do it, how is it that he is able to get away with these things? And it seems like it's a plan to me.
It is a plan, Ralph.
Because we're not laughing as if it were Calhoun. But it is Calhoun up there pointing his finger and looking left and right when he says, I don't want reparations. My family doesn't need it. Of course, you've sold your soul to the devil, which is the corporations. They will take care of your family. And my friend, you do need it. Because when they're tired of you, you will hit the scrap heap, you know, at high speed.
Absolutely.
So,
let us understand, since we're talking about euphemistically, of course, our so-called friend, Obama, let us understand that Obama comes from a background of slaveholders. Obama had no slaves and has no slaves in his background. He is not, and that is why I absolutely refuse to acknowledge him as a black American, because a black American, now he may be an African American, but a black American definitely has the ancestral blood of slaves and oftentimes indigenous so-called Indian peoples in our veins. So, you know, he definitely was made to be acceptable, and that is why he is, as you said, Ralph. The sad thing is they made him acceptable to black Americans, okay, who overlooked the fact that what they were doing was putting nothing more than a house Negro, who is actually oftentimes more dangerous than the massa himself, okay, putting this house Negro in the so-called white, quote-unquote, house. And that's exactly where he belongs, in the white house, because it is not the people's house, it is the white house. So,
wow.
I mean,
I hope you
this
gentlemen give yourself credit for raising these issues with the black public, because these issues are never raised. In our so-called media, they are not raised, not even less so in our so-called media than in the major media. We don't talk about these issues. And when you talk about the issue you were talking about, he is not of us, they are able to do this because we never dealt with who we are in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Queen Mother Moore's definition. Mm-hmm. Who are we? We are members of the non-self-governing nation of Africans born in America. No more than a colony.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's a lot to wrap yourself around. Non-self-governing nation of Africans born in America. Now, that's a serious subject. That's a serious title. And my dear friend Betty Davis wanted to do her dissertation on it, The Non-Self-Governing Nation of Africans Born in America, and no university in this country would touch it.
Of course not. This is
the 60s, the 70s. This is too explosive an issue. Now, where was our talk radio? I wish you had been there, Reverend Pinckney.
Oh, I wish I was.
We would have called on you, and we would have aired these issues.
Yeah.
And that you air these issues every Sunday night, you're educating people. And as you do that, I love it, and I fear for you.
Ralph, let me say this. In 1968, I wrote this paper. It was a 15-page paper about welfare. They had the illusion, this is what the white folks said, that the illusion was that there was more black people on welfare than white.
Yes.
And that we was looking for a handout.
Yes.
And I did the research on this paper.
Yes, yes.
And matter of fact, it was so devastating.
I remember.
That they refused to even give me a grade on the newspaper. He told me this is unacceptable.
Yes.
And I'm gonna be honest, I'm not a great writer, but I know how to deal with facts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it was almost unheard of for somebody to even speak on that level.
Exactly. And I remember the effect that it had. You know, you go along and you're dealing with everything, and then somebody, you get a paper that says, well, there's more white folk on welfare than black people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the perception that they have laid out there for us is, you know, totally different. The perceptions that we have are geared to keep us stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Willie
right.
Lynch syndrome. Anything that they tell us is to work against us. Any philosophy that they teach us works against us, and they certainly
right.
they rang the bell with Obama because this is the one they use color because we are more color conscious than white folk, I believe.
Yes.
I look around at black folk and I just shake my head.
You're right.
They beat us there, and I says, and now the coup de grace. They give us an Obama, they silence us, and they send our children off to die in foreign wars. They have no employment here, no education where they could learn to be productive. There is nothing for them but to go kick down some door of some other person of color in some foreign country in the false belief that it's going to move them forward within this society. Kind of reminds me of the Buffalo Soldiers all over again. They have
that's right.
Slavery.
That's right.
Yeah, I like that. You said a mouthful. You said the Buffalo Soldiers. Oh, that's perfect. And let me read this another excerpt from this. It says, gentlemen, these kits are your key to control. Use them. It says, have your wives, your children, use them. Never miss an opportunity. If you use it intensively for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful. Then he said, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for your kindness. But do not forget you pick old black male versus the young, and the young black male against the old black male. You use dark-skinned slave versus the light-skinned slave, and the light-skinned slave versus the dark-skinned. You must use the female versus the male, and the male versus the female. You must also have your white servant and overseer distrust all black. And I would tell you, they can't like none of them. But it is necessary that your slave trust and depend us. They must love and respect and trust us only, us white folks. Oh, man, I tell you.
Let me tell you something. You preach, brother, preach. You know, because one of the things when Betty Davis does this with her classes, I used to be a teacher, so she runs stuff by me. How should I present this? I'm going to present this in this manner. And I say, you know, just presenting it breaks my heart.
Mm.
And I'm saying, how you are able to stand before these kids and not explode these young people and try to educate them as to where they are, what this society is set up for them, and to do it year after year, and there's a certain time of year when she gets to the point, she says, well, this is, you know, certain part of the semester, this is when I introduced the Willie Lynch syndrome, and I'm saying, well, better you than me, because I would die, and then there you are, out there raising it again, raise it, teach them, make them buy it, take it apart, dissect it, help them with it, educate them, and you will be doing your great work of striking a blow every Sunday against this ignorance that allows the empire to continue to control us.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, brothers, I am impressed. You know, like the first time I heard you, I says, wow, listen to this. Let's keep it going is all I can say. And don't say, yeah, we have lost the battle, but we have not abandoned the field.
Absolutely.
And as long as you're out there, you are a problem, as I say. And the bigger the problem you are to them, the closer you get to solving this, the more I worry about you. Because, you see, they have methods.
Oh, absolutely.
They have methods. You know, you can't be out there running around and spewing truth. You know, it's that thing is about Africa, the sleeping giant, let him sleep. Don't woke him, let him sleep. You're out there shaking people. And this is, you know, Whirlpool notices it. They have people out there saying, who's the troublemaker? Who is going to create problems for us? And in this day and age, I say, we must become more presidential every day. You know, we must begin to use, when I say presidential, act and think like the presidents of our country talk.
Mm-hmm.
We must use economic sanctions. And see, now, you know, 5% is the difference. You know, you don't have to close anything down.
Right, absolutely.
Is the profit and loss margin there.
Uh-huh.
You mess around with 5%. If we could educate people to the tune of 5%, do not buy. Put it in your pocket. We break into that cycle of poverty because they give us enough to exist. We can't save on what you get on welfare. You can barely exist. So we become not a threat. What they give us, we must spend. When they need money into the society, they give us a little more money. We spend it. It props up the society a little bit. Then they take it back. And, and it's a cycle. Comes starting right from 1865. Blacks gain a little bit. Then the next thing you know, the Klan and the governments, they take it all back. They annex land. They do the whole thing. Then in the 60s, when the blacks were fighting just to vote, just for a little bit of dignity, then they took the land. They were throwing people off for taxes, et cetera. Another big push. Now we're in another moment. A greater loss in black economy has taken place in this foreclosure thing than ever before in history. We've lost more economic power, and we're not halfway through it yet. It's going to 10 million.
Hey, Ralph, let me say this. You said something when you said foreclosures. Now, you know, with Wells Fargo and this Bank of America, all those folks, there was a way out for the people with the foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
See, in the contract, when they got that money, they were really not allowed to foreclose on people's property. But whatever amount of money that you was afforded to pay, they were supposed to reduce your mortgage for. But the people, it never got down to the people.
Never got down.
So what I did, here's what I did once. I couldn't go in the courtroom myself, but I wrote a brief for this girl, for this young lady, to go in there and present it. When they read the brief, these guys were in total shock. They could not believe that this girl knew anything about this, what was going on. And what it did is stunned them. They had to give her a continuance so they can go back and analyze it and figure out, was she on the right track or not. But the problem was she was not willing to continue to fight. We prolonged it for about 45 days. And that was it. But we had them. But now they came up to you. They're paying back these loans now, these $22 billion, these $50 billion, and that almost makes the what we was able to do with the foreclosure almost obsolete. But what we want to do, like I said before, we have to educate the people. And what you're saying is so wonderful. I tell you, Ralph, I mean, just having you on this show is tremendous. And I know my brother Larry, I know how he deals, but we have to keep telling the people.
Yeah.
We have to get out here. And look, and you said, well, I'm not afraid of Whirlpool. You know, the worst thing they can do is come out here.
I'm afraid for you. You're not afraid. I'm afraid for you.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? Anytime a Whirlpool can go out and give somebody a letter like this, you know you're from Benton Harbor when, and say, I mean, to tell this person if you can go to Donnie Pageport and get your haircut, smoke some weed, and watch niggas sell dope across the street all at the same time, you know you're from Benton Harbor, and they don't fire this man. I got a major problem with that. I don't know about how anybody else feel, but when you use that N word around me and you white and you know better, I got a problem. And then a lot of people, they gonna dislike me for this, but I don't care. I don't care about you, a person disliking me. I care less whether you like me or not. The point is, just do right. If you do right, you'll never see my face or hear my voice. But when you're doing wrong, you're gonna hear it as long as I can give it.
Okay,
and but
yeah.
How do people accept this and say it's all right? That's the only thing that get me about black people. How do we do it and let these folks keep getting away with the same thing over and over again? Go out and buy a Whirlpool, a stove and refrigerator, a washer and dryer. I don't get it. Help me to understand that, Ralph.
No, that your program hasn't gotten to enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because once we become educated and understand where we are and what these people intend for us, and I feel bad in even thinking a thought like that. Somebody who has worked hard to get a home, to make life better for their children, now they're going to be forced to understand where they are, but I'm afraid it's destructive. The young lady didn't want to fight after 45 days. It hurts you. It takes something out of you. You put your hide into having a modicum of success, and boom, everything you work for is gone. You're on the street.
Mm.
You can't put your medicine away if you have medicine because you don't have a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Shelter. You're out there. It breaks us down, and I feel that anybody who can get to their radio and listen for a half hour, an hour, to get some of these ideas, to understand. They say it's the one that hits you that you don't see coming that knocks you out. Well,
mm-hmm.
if you understand it and see it coming, it creates great pain, but it does not knock you out. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not a religious person, but I pray that you continue your good work because it does reach the places where you have no idea of who it gets to.
Mm-hmm.
There are people out there who are saying, wow. And I know that Willingdon syndrome, that's a shocker. I don't care how sophisticated you are, but when you read that, it's like, whoa. What they have in mind for us and what they've been doing. And that brings us, and it cuts, and it's the same thing. Once you get the framework, we see that why do they hate Fidel Castro so bad? It's got nothing to do with his religion or lack of.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with his fighting the Willie Lynch syndrome. The Europeans organized the world according to color. If you look like us, the closer you look like us, we're going to put you on top of your society with our guns, et cetera.
Mm.
And the less you look like us, you go to the bottom. Now, you gentlemen opened up with the program with that. If you're yellow, you mellow. If you're brown,
mm-hmm.
get around. If
mm-hmm.
you're black, get back.
That's
we
it.
All know these things. We laugh about them. But
mm-hmm.
if somebody like Obama says it in using the King's English, we accept it.
Yeah.
It's just as ridiculous and as funny as if Calhoun had said it. So when he speaks, you know, and I'm going to do what Larry says, I'm going to write a little history
mm-hmm.
on how we have been misused by our misuse
mm-hmm.
of language.
Wow.
Saying what it means. You don't ever have to say anything. Tell the truth about what it means. You never need to use
mm-hmm.
a name. You
mm-hmm.
are what you do. A nation is as it does. A government is the policies. And if we look at the policies, they're all destructive to us.
Mm.
And we need someone like you out there saying it, Larry out there writing it, explaining it. Because you never know the day that somebody who we feel has been beyond the pale, never going to learn anything, with this economic structure. Maybe when people, when we get hungry, we're going to be more educated. We throw us out of a job, we're jobless. Throw us out of a home, we're homeless. Wonder what happens when we're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
If we can, you know, the combination of people telling truth.
That's right. Truth telling.
Telling truth and need to learn. Mm-hmm. What is that? Necessity is the mother of invention. If you need to know, and when you're hungry, you need to know. Let us hope that our people, when they're hungry, will not be so beaten that it doesn't matter, that they refuse to go to this dark place quietly or gently. So we can only keep pitching and hope that somebody is out there catching.
Absolutely.
Right.
And Larry, we haven't had a chance to hear from you. Can you give us about, just tell us a little bit of your thoughts right fast.
Well, I was thinking of as particularly Reverend Pinckney, as Brother Ralph was talking, and I wanted to ask Ralph to draw the correlation. You may have said this before on the program, but say it again. Talk about what we open up the program with, Ralph, and Fannie Lou Hamer. What they did to Fannie Lou Hamer.
You see the interesting thing. You see, you can say something. As you started the program, if I say it, then it has a certain ring rather than someone else saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And like Tim Weiss always says, he's a white person of Jewish background. He says, I don't know why I'm always called to speak on it, Martin Luther King's, you know, celebrations. He says, but it seems that even though there are black people who know it better, live it longer, have said it better than I, somehow when a white person says it, it becomes acceptable.
Absolutely.
And he admits this. So I'm saying we have a situation here where not only do we have to speak the truth, we have to have the right person telling the truth.
That's
and who
right.
is the right person? Somebody who they have been not been conditioned
mm-hmm.
to disrespect. Our people have been conditioned to respect a light-skinned person of color who speaks in the King's English, as we call it,
mm-hmm.
and whatever foolish thing they say, it's amen.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
We have to find
those who are acceptable in their eyesight
mm-hmm.
to tell them the same thing that we've been trying to tell them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know what, you're really saying something too, because one of the things that we've been conditioned, this is where the Willie Lynch comes in.
Right.
I could say the same thing that this white person say, and they will believe this white person before me.
Right.
I remember at a time when, before everything started happening to me, when I said something, people really wasn't willing to listen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I could say the same identical thing that this white guy is saying, and they would believe that white person over me. And they could be my friend
yes.
and still believe this white person over me.
Conditioning.
They were conditioned. But now, since I've been to prison, since all this has happened to me, since everything done happened, they see things entirely different now. When I open my mouth, everybody want to hear exactly what I have to say, and now I talk a little bit different. I don't talk like I used to talk. I used to be overly aggressive, but Ralph, before I got the lamb on here, he got something that he wanted to discuss real fast. But I want you to stay on, and you can comment on what he has to say. All to Larry, it's
yeah,
the
bro.
Lamb. The lamb is the Larry Ralph. It's the lamb. The lamb is Ralph and me. Go ahead, lamb. Say what you got to say.
Well, I certainly love the introduction that you bring about, because basically that's what the lamb is all about.
Mm-hmm.
We are all basically under this power and authority that we have given to government and corporations. And as the gentleman has said earlier concerning the various laws that are coming about, you have been to prison yourself, the great Reverend Pinckney.
Mm-hmm.
I myself has been to prison. And under these oppressions, under these
don't
persecutions and all, we're dealing with, let's say, laws that are actually created to do one or two things, and that is basically to continue to oppress, repress, and drive back and down, and also to create also the top class, the overclass, the powerful class. Now, concerning the authority that we're given government, the authority that we're given away, basically, who has the authority? Who has the power? And this is an area that I don't think a lot of people actually get into or actually even think about, because it's something that they've been trained to literally ignore. I, myself, being a student and a scientist concerning power, I like to think of myself sometimes as an alien on a spacecraft who has come to planet Earth and landing right smack in the middle of the ghetto. And out of the spacecraft, a door opened, and what comes out? Superior intelligence walks out upon the people, enlighten the people, and not just enlighten, but actually show with a vehicle of circumstance, a vehicle of power, a vehicle of education, new knowledge, with the plan on how to literally get the job done. And as we move forward to the center stage, yourself, the great Reverend Pinckney, who is also the Lamb, and the Lamb himself, who is struggling to get to the center stage amidst obstacles that are placed upon him by what you call legislative authority. Right now, the Reverend Pinckney is working with me very, very adamantly to drive back a lot of the oppression that I'm dealing with my family. They're trying to put me out of a home for the simple reason, some say, I've been in prison. Yes. Now, I heard Obama speak about, well, black men are not taking care of their business and all that sort of thing. I've always taken care of my family, and when I got home, I proceeded to do the same. However, the laws would not allow
exactly.
The so-called felon. I used to be black now.
Yeah, that's right.
I couldn't sit at the front of the bus. Mm-hmm. I couldn't go in and eat various things because I was black. There was just a lot of things I couldn't do because I was black. Now, well, I'm a felon, and I still can't do these things. So,
oh, yeah.
If the alien was speaking to the people, the alien already knows the inferior intelligence and life that we're living down here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, he brings about a certain kind of superior intelligence with a plan and bring and raise the human up to a level to where he takes back his authority and his power and literally right the ship that has literally gone wrong. And this is what we are literally instituting to do, the great Reverend Pinckney, the great mighty Lamb, and the rest of us must move forward.
The Lamb, let me ask you a question.
Yep,
are you saying now that you're no longer a black man, are they saying that you're no longer a black man, that you're a felon? Did the felon take away you being black?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the felon actually takes away your being a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that's
there
the case.
There you go.
If
it
that's
takes
the case,
away
now,
your citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
If that's
the case.
It takes
away your ability to access government programs for education,
mm-hmm.
government funds for education. They're tying this thing up.
Let me say this.
They make you a felon, you know, living while black. You're an automatic felon.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me back to the days of the vagrancy laws. If you didn't have any money, you were a vagrant and had to go to jail. And if you had money, you must have stolen it and had to go to jail. So now they make you a felon. You give the state 3 years labor, and then you could never get back because they have laws dealing with felons.
Mm.
So therefore, what I'm trying to say, by being the felon, okay, basically now they have literally repressed, oppressed, and driven back that which everyone has gained by not using the word black, but using the word felon. And for the whites that are actually felons, well, that's an area that they don't have to deal with, because instituting whether or not you can receive a benefit or not is not a matter of whether or not you are a black felon or a white felon. It's a matter of basically who is allowing you to a benefit. Because when I came back, and I'm talking about public housing, which is subsidized by tax dollars, these tax dollars, like all other tax dollars, are actually instituting governmental racism and discrimination. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yes.
You're paying for it. Therefore, you're saying, if I'm a felon, I can't be a citizen because I don't have full benefits. And so why am I paying taxes? Why am I paying taxes to not benefit from anything?
And you can't move in with your mother or your wife in public housing because you're a felon, and that would risk their housing.
Yeah.
This is how pernicious this thing is. He goes on the air and talks about the black man's responsibility, and with every law on the book denying him his rights, and he never mentions it.
And I tell Obama that speech that he made about black men pertaining to their responsibility. Well, I tell you, I've spoken to a lot of black men in prison who have sold what you call the drugs. Well, you know what? The other story that's not being told, how many lies that the actual drugs being sold that is actually saving a lot of blacks out there who didn't have food on the table, who didn't have a roof over their heads, and the mothers couldn't send the children to school. If it wasn't for that black man out there selling and hustling those drugs, otherwise he would not have an opportunity to do anything.
Exactly.
A lot of people don't look at the Robin Hood effect of selling drugs.
Mm, yes.
I hate to say it.
And remember this, too.
Yes.
They also want you to sell drugs also.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Because that also, there's more people in prison for drugs today than any other thing.
That's where the trap is.
You see? And that's also keeping them working.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? And also cutting off the male. Now they're putting women in prison.
Huh.
Before it was just males.
Yeah.
And also, Ralph, we got a few minutes. We just want to let's hit on land just for a second, just so people know exactly what we want. Tell us how we can help land.
You may help Lynn Stewart, somebody who has earned help,
mm-hmm.
because she's dealt with all of the issues that we've talked about. And she's a white woman, a great attorney, who understood, who learned, and said, "I didn't know this existed." But the moment she found out, she says, "I have been a person who have had the advantage of skin privilege, and I want to give it back." So I would appreciate it if everyone would write to Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, M-C-C, that's Manhattan Correctional Center, capital letter M-C-C, 150 Park Row, 2S, that's 2 South, and these numbers, 53504-054, 53504-054, and that's New York, New York, 10007. Write your concerns. Write what you heard. Talk your questions. Put your home address on it, and she will answer it, and she will love every minute of it. And let Benton Harbor be represented in the mail that she's getting, because it'll go a long way to her improving of her mental condition, knowing that what she has put a 40-year struggle into it has taken root through the Pinckneys, Reverend Pinckney, Larry Pinckney, and the Lamb, getting this out there to say, hey, we must support those who support us, and that should be an issue in one of your future programs.
Matter of fact, I can guarantee you this, it will. I do need to talk to you because I'm going to Detroit on the 18th, and I will be talking about her. But before we close the show, we got less than a minute, I want to talk about Whirlpool. We got to understand this. We got to get this international boycott of Whirlpool. We got to show them that their racist activity, we will no longer accept. The Lamb, can you say something real fast? You got about less than 6 minutes because I'm going to give Larry the last 30.
Yes, yes. So as we move forward to drive back the racism of and the practices of Whirlpool, I think a national as well as an international boycott
mm-hmm.
of Whirlpool is the first step in literally showing and presenting as well as creating what you call a new tone on the in the black community as well as the community at large, that will simply, the new people are on their way to the center stage. The new people are on their way to the center stage. That's what I have to say about that.
All right.
Well, brother, can you hear me? Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. The bottom line as far as Whirlpool is concerned is we need to look at Whirlpool for what it is. It's a blood-sucking, anti-people, money-making, slave
basically a manufacturing corporation. Let's just be honest. It needs to be dealt with for what it is. It is just that we need to come together because all people are affected by it, particularly communities of color. So Whirlpool and all the rest of these blood-sucking corporations need to be dealt with for what they are, and we need to stand up and go on from there.
We will put it out on our list, Larry.
Absolutely. And we want to keep
area.
That's right. We want to keep it out. We want to keep it flowing. And Ralph, I need to talk to you. I won't be able to talk to you until after 8 o'clock, but call me or either email me. And Larry, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you, Ralph.
Love you, bro.
I love you to Ralph. And I tell you, that we got less than 5 seconds to say this. I love you all. And listen, can everybody come back next week? Because I was going to have General Baker on, but I'd rather talk to this group if it's okay with y'all.
You get it.
Fine with me.
Okay, well, I will talk to y'all next week, and we are now no longer on the air. And I'm going to have to say goodnight.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, now. Good night, bro. Bye-bye.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, bro.